with that. Enough with that. Jeez. How you doing, everybody? My name is Scott Condomo, and welcome to the Southwest Florida Sports Report. This is episode number 14, our wonderful Super Bowl post-game show. I am joined to my right by Josh McAwee.
Hello, hello. What's up, everybody?
Man? All right. Well, either way, we unfortunately do not have Justin Raffone here. He's licking his wounds after the New England Patriots loss this evening. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually,
It's a weird coincidence tonight. No, but honestly, Justin is home. He is suffering from some flu-like symptoms. We need to get him on some IVs. We need to get him all back up to 100%. The show definitely misses him. So, Justin, get well soon for us, buddy. But, Josh, you're here. We were able to watch the game tonight. You know,
what a game,
first and foremost. If anybody caught the preview, you would know that all three of us look like complete jackwagons.
Yeah, we were.
Our predictions might have been the farthest off of any professional out there, probably. If we tend to call ourselves that, we like to dabble, I guess, so to speak. But we definitely were not. Well, the nail missed the mark there, I think, when it came to our predictions. But Josh, really, first and foremost, I guess, as we get into the show, you know, what was your take other than it just being a great game, though? What, you know, outside of the final result, what were some of the highlights? What were some of the keys of this game? Things that just kind of caught you off guard that you really weren't expecting outside of, well, you actually called the Eagles victory, so you were half right, but
just way off on the score.
Yeah, but please elaborate.
I don't know if there was anything that surprised me. Maybe I didn't expect Foles to play that well because he played really even better than he played in the NFC Championship game. And, you know, he even catches a touchdown pass. So that, you know, would be maybe the one thing that surprised me. It didn't shock me because he's a good quarterback. He's a good backup quarterback. I mean, let's be honest. You know, I don't think unless some team is really desperate and offers the Eagles – you know, some good draft capital or even a player, he's going to be backing up Carson Wentz again next year because he's still under contract. And why would you wouldn't want to lose a backup quarterback like that? Look, you lose Wentz. A lot of people said, you know, this is the end of the line for the Eagles. I was guilty. You know, I said Foles is good, so don't sleep on Foles, but he's not Wentz. So I didn't expect them to get this far. So, I mean, he played great.
I think, honestly, it was really weird in the sense that I'm one of those guys. I'm guilty along with it, just like you said. I thought when Wentz went down, I honestly
thought, twister.
Right? A little bit. I thought when Wentz went down, though, I literally thought their season was over with. I thought thought they would get into the playoffs because I think at that point they had already clinched anyway.
They were pretty.
But I didn't think Foles would carry them. I didn't even think Foles would carry them to the Super Bowl. So I was like, you know, there's no way he might get him past in the divisional round, but he's not going to get him past the NFC title game. Well, he did all of that, and then some. I mean, the guy played out of his mind tonight. Mm-hmm. I think some of the keys, you know, it's funny that, like I said, we don't talk like we're professionals or anything like that, but we were, outside of the prediction and the actual, you know, game result or the actual, you know, the actual score, so to speak, what were the keys that we talked about for each team and what they would need to be successful, we were pretty much right on the mark with. You know, we talked about it. There were no sacks in this game up until the very end, and the Eagles didn't give up one, and that offensive line was a key factor in that game tonight. Yep. The Eagles were able to punish up front. They were able to run the football. I mean, Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount both had productive games, I think, in my opinion. They were able to really maintain that change of pace type atmosphere. Yep. But and then it left, you know, as you had said it before in the preview too, you know, with the run-pass option – you know, Nick Foles was able to use a lot of play action tonight. Was able to use a lot of, and Zach Ertz, Nelson Aguilar, and Alshon Jeffrey came to play tonight.
Yep.
Those guys showed up. I mean, I even saw Brent Celek downfield like nine times tonight, which is crazy. I don't think he caught any passes, but either way, there was a lot of production from a lot of different moving pieces in that offense, and that's what the Eagles have been thriving on. You know, because honestly, I thought this was going to be the game that the Patriots were going to be able to get to Foles. He was going to be rushed all night, and they got some pressure. But for the most part, Foles was able to pick his way down the field however he wanted to do it. I mean, he was in control of that game tonight.
And we talked about if there's any team that's going to prepare well enough to stop an RPO offense, you know, because we talked about how it's kind of taken over the league. Teams are using it more and more. Mm-hmm. We figured it would be New England, and they really struggled.
Yeah.
And one of the keys I thought to the game was the Philly pass rush. And like I said, it didn't have to be sacks. They just had to hit them and get some pressures, and it would do the job. And for a good portion of the game, it looked like that it was getting a jump. You saw Brady get happy feet as he tends to do, but yeah. You look at the end of the game and you're like, wow, he torched them. But Foles did the same thing on the other side. And even though we all agreed that the Patriots had a better secondary, mm-hmm. You know, when we were ranking different sections of the defense in the preview show, and they got torched. Foles lit them up.
I mean, that defense as a whole unit, I mean, they gave up, what, 41, I think, total?
Yeah.
They gave up 41 points. That defense got, for the most part, got manhandled.
Yeah. Tonight. Oh,
want to put anything against, I mean, the Eagles didn't play stellarly on defense either. No. Tom Brady threw for over 500 yards in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, each team really had their way on offense. Yep. 33 points than any other, and it should be good enough to win you a football game.
And which was huge, because we talked about one of the keys was the Patriots. They'll let you get into the red zone, but once mm-hmm. you're there, you have to settle for field goals.
Yeah.
We saw that in the beginning of the game, and then mm-hmm. from there on out, I mean, the Eagles were, once they got in there, it was almost guaranteed.
You talked about it in the preview game. We all kind of emphasized on it, Justin included. You know, we all kind of emphasized on the fact that one of the advantages or one of the great schemes about this Eagles team is their ability to adapt. The adaptations they make mid-game, what they're able to do. They saw the concept, I think, that Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick were putting out there,
yep.
and they were able to adjust to it. And I really don't think, and this is where I think it got it really interesting, is I was waiting for the turn at the half, the Patriots to come back out. And they did, for the most part. They did. They came out. They
came right out, touchdown right at the end of the second half.
And they took a lead even in the second half. But the changes they were making, there was no answer defensively.
Yep.
The Patriots kind of figured it out offensively, but they couldn't figure it out defensively. They had no answer on defense, Matt Patricia, Belichick, for what the Eagles were doing, and they were able to have their way with them at will.
And you saw Doug Peterson on that fourth down call,
yeah.
you know, in his own territory going for it. I mean, the balls on that guy to make that call, because most teams like that would be like, no, let's play the field position game. We don't want to give the Patriots mm-hmm. a short field. Let's punt the ball, give it, you know, take 40 more seconds off the clock, give them a bad field position and see mm-hmm. if they can drive. And Peterson's thinking, like, it's the Patriots, it's Tom Brady. If they're going to score, they're going to score. It doesn't matter where they start in the field. And, you know, he throws it all on the line. I mean, great call. They get
it. Well,
obviously, if they don't get it, it looks bad. But I think it was a great call either way.
The 60 minutes, and you have to play the Patriots for 60 minutes. I think that was the right play call, the right mindset.
Yep.
Keep your foot on the throttle. Keep your foot going down the field. You want to keep moving the ball. And that's it's a gutsy call, but it showed that it kind of coincides with what we're talking about with the Eagles knowing what they can do on offense and knowing that they kind of have their number yet.
Yep.
And they're going to exploit it. Like, it's almost like, hey, until you stop it, I'm going to keep running it. You may get me in a third and short or a third and manageable, and where it's like, okay, you know, maybe even a fourth and short, but I'm not going to play this conservatively because I know I can get you on four downs.
Yeah.
I know I can get a first down. I can convert this.
Yeah.
And it was almost like clockwork for most of the night. But, I mean, Josh, I mean, we called it a couple of times during that game. I mean, Nick Foles threw a couple of dimes in this game.
Yeah.
Just absolute beautiful passes for touchdowns, nonetheless. Not even just like, oh, wow, that was a heck of a completion. Like, touchdowns. Like,
yeah.
I mean, just the way he was leading receivers, the way he was seeing the field tonight, the way he was checking down the guys. I mean, it was perfect, man.
He played with a confidence that you typically see from a Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I mean, cool. Nothing rattled him. I mean, he stayed poised in the pocket for every single play. He ran the RPO to perfection. I mean, I said, don't sleep on Nick Foles. He's a good quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He's not Wentz. He's obviously not Brady. But he came out and he outplayed Brady.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he outplayed Brady. I mean, I don't put any fault of it on Brady because Gronk made a lot of plays. Brady threw.
Oh, that Gronk to Ertz matchup lived up to everything we thought it would.
But I mean. But, you know, I mean, because I don't take nothing from Gronk. Gronk had a great game. Their running game, for the most part, did pretty well. I mean, they had a productive offense.
Yeah.
Usually on any other night, 30-plus points is going
to
win you a football game.
They did enough to win. The fact is they didn't do what they did during a regular season, and that's they didn't hold Philly to field goals. Philly mm-hmm. got in the end zone. That was the story.
I mean, and I really
knew
thought,
the Patriots
yeah.
were going to get theirs on offense. You know, mm-hmm. you just figured in order to win, they had to do what they do, and that's making opponents settle for three, and they didn't do it.
And they couldn't do that. I mean, you saw it too. You saw the look on Tom Brady's face. You saw the look. And, I mean, we saw it. I mean, when Tom Brady fumbled that football in the very end, that was the one sack of the night, everybody, where they actually got pressure on Tom Brady. Well, they got pressure on Tom Brady most of the night, but this is the one time they got to him before he let go of the football.
Strip sack.
Strip sack.
Looked like Von Miller was out there.
Yeah, turned out to be the determining factor, I think, in this football game. That was the determining turnover.
Yeah.
You know, where the offense had done enough to win all night, but they just couldn't keep carrying this team that long because they needed a stop defensively, and they just weren't able to get one.
I mean, and the entire game, no matter what the score was, you knew until that clock hit zero, you couldn't count the Patriots.
I mean, there
was,
and even at the end, they were driving a little bit. Yeah. I mean, and Josh, you even noticed. I mean, you said it.
Every time he those back-to-back plays where he gets it to Gronk and he gets out of bounds, I'm thinking, oh, no.
Well, then you also said on that last Hail Mary, that chuck to the end zone, there should have been a penalty on that.
It was before the ball was in the air, so it should have been illegal contact, and it would have been an automatic first down, but it only been, I believe, 5 yards.
Mm-hmm. Would have put him past the 50, like, but at least another shot.
But it was so blatant out in the open. Yeah. I mean, they're lucky. They're one lucky it wasn't called, and they're also lucky that it wasn't while the ball was in the air and called, because it would have been a spot foul.
But even then, like, we were watching that. Like, that ball gets tipped. It looks like it gets hit back into a Patriots receiver, and he's gonna like fall into the end zone. But then the ball like got kicked around again, and it went down. I almost shot up out of the seat. I had no interest in seeing
what Patriots fan would have said. Patriots fans would have said,
"Oh man,
had they tied that game and gone to overtime."
Well, I mean, I was going to say it was going to be pandemonium, but if anybody has a live shot of Philadelphia at this point, I mean, I've already seen stuff on
fires in the streets,
people dancing around in their underwear, captions saying all these the guys aren't going to make it through the night.
All like, the oil that they put all over the poles of this, the light poles and the street signs, not working.
No, not at all, man. I mean, Philly really, has anybody ever seen like Escape from LA or like these like apocalyptic type movies?
You know, I saw something that was pretty funny, and I talked about this, and then I saw it on I believe it was Facebook, and said, you know, it was like a funeral. It said, rest in peace, you know, no rings for the Eagles memes. And it's true, because you see them all the time, especially from, you know, Giants, Cowboys, Redskins fans, the whole NFC East division. And look at them now.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, and I have to give, you know, the ownership of the Eagles a lot of credit, too. Is, I mean, they win that Super Bowl. The first thing they come out to is they say, this is for the fans. Yep. Like, that city, as much as I can't stand Philadelphia half the time, you have to give it credit. Like, you
loyal
tip your
fan
cap.
Base.
Yeah, you tip your cap to them because they've been waiting a long time for this. Maybe they'll mellow out a little bit. You know, maybe they'll start to calm down and not try
Don't
to
hold
kill
your
everyone.
Breath.
Yeah, we'll let them get this one last night out of it. But then you can't say, like, listen, guys, you got a title. Like, fall in line. All right, you know.
Now, what if the Flyers go and win the cup?
Well, then I might jump off the building. But you know, I hope that doesn't happen. You know, but I think the 76ers are probably closer. But I'm just gonna throw that out there. But no, really, this is a great moment for the city of Philadelphia. You know, you even have to tip your cap to the Patriots a little bit. Nobody wants to do that, but they had another great season.
Yeah.
Had another follow-up. I mean, they literally were in this game until the last 2 minutes, you know, when that fumble happened. They were in this game up until the last 20 seconds, really.
And we talked about it. The team with the superior roster won, and we talked about what was the difference. They had the superior roster, but what didn't they have? They didn't have Tom Brady. So what does Foles go out and do? Plays like Tom Brady. Yeah. Tom Brady still got his. As good as that Philly defense is, as good as that pass rush is, they didn't get to him enough to throw him completely off his game, because he definitely got his. I mean, they had, what was it, almost like 500 yards total, like at halftime. Yeah, it's insane.
It was crazy. Exactly. Like, there was over, I think there was way over 1,000 yards of total offense in this game. But
And we were talking about, we wish it wasn't like that. That's more of a college-type game. We'd like to see more defense, you know, to be true to the NFL, what you expect.
Well, my gray hair doesn't lie. I mean, I really like, I mean, I am kind of old school.
Get off
sense,
my lawn.
Right? Yeah, I am. I'm that guy. You know, I'm out there grilling day with my New Balances on. Just like, no, but really, honestly, I can't fathom, like, I think the NFL loved how competitive this game was. I loved how competitive this game was, but like we said at the end, you know, I did wish for a little bit of defense. I saw one defensive highlight all night. that was the strip sack. That was it.
Like, I thought my 29-27 prediction was high-scoring game.
I was way off the mark. That's a 28-13 Patriots. I thought they were going to come out and take it to them.
Was a lot of people that I talked to that said that they expected the Patriots to blow them out.
Yeah. Well, I thought this was going to be that statement game, like I said during the preview. I thought this was going to be that game.
I know there was a little bit of anti-Patriot fatigue bias in me thinking that they weren't going to blow them out, but there also was a genuineness where I was like, you know, it's the Super Bowl. The Eagles got that tough defense. I just didn't see that happening.
And that's the thing. I mean, because I don't want to take – I mean, and let's take a look at it this way. You know, we talked about it in the preview of Ertz versus Gronkowski, right? And you said it lived up to that. You know, what do you think? This is almost like a paradigm shift a little bit. Like, this is another step for Ertz to kind of climb the ladder here, because Ertz was the Eagles' leading receiver all season. He's a great passing receiver
in the red zone.
Yeah, I mean, NFL. I mean, he was wonderful. But you know, because Gronk is getting up there in years, he's an injury liability a lot during the time. He stayed healthy for most of the part this year, though. He's been good all year, you know. But really, do you see this kind of being like a shift? Or, I mean, because it's hard to say the battle of tight ends. Like, we never really talked about it. But
I don't know if necessarily I'd call it this at that point, because as great as Ertz has been all year, and as great as he was tonight, and as great as Gronk was tonight, obviously it's hard to take Gronk, because of how, especially as well as Gronk got you two touchdowns.
Yeah, tonight. I mean, Gronk did everything he could have done tonight. I mean, he made some spectacular catches.
Yeah, too. Like, as good as he played, he's still the best in the league right now, in my opinion. But right now, it's I have a hard time saying overall Ertz better than Kelce at this point, because Kelce's been doing it more consistent for a few more years, but Ertz has definitely made his case for being right up there with the elite tight ends in the league.
Well, I'd like to see what Kelce's going to do without Alex Smith now, but
They love Patrick Mahomes, so that's going to be another.
I guess that's going to be the interesting development here. But I don't want to jump too far ahead here. You know, not first and foremost, but Josh, what do you think? Even just about Foles getting the MVP.
He definitely deserved it. Yeah. He's the first player to throw and catch a touchdown pass in Super Bowl history.
That's great.
I mean, talk about the balls on Peterson just to call that fourth down, but to call that play right there.
Right, that play, there's so much that could go wrong with that play. What was so cool about that play was that, and anybody who's watching the game knows this, that it's not the same concept, not the same formation. Well, same concept, but just not the same formation. But the Patriots try to run that play, and Tom Brady drops it like a buffoon. And would have had like 20 yards ahead of him for a first down. Would have been not for a touchdown or anything.
20 yards for anybody else would have been 5 for him.
It would have been enough for the first down. Would have been a great play call, though. Would have been a really cool creative play call, because you don't see that a lot, or at least that kind of play call. You know, but then the Patriots or the Eagles come out and they execute it flawlessly.
To perfection for a touchdown.
I mean, you had Foles looking like a receiver, like diamond formation with the hand catch over the shoulder, kind of just like textbook.
Yeah, it's perfect.
You know, Tom Brady tried to like over the shoulder like Willie Mays and just let it fall right through his fingertips.
Hit him in the hands.
Hit him in the hands. Can't drop that, Brady. Can't have those drops there, Tom. All right, you're not America's quarterback if you're doing that stuff. But really, you know. You said you agree with Foles getting the MVP. I thought it was kind of a push, because Foles had a heck of a night. So I don't want to take nothing from Foles.
Yeah.
But I really thought Ertz made a case. I thought Ertz would have been a great.
Especially with the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah.
But I think just overall, the numbers that Foles put up, threw for 3 touchdowns, caught another, you know, just the over 300 yards, almost 400. I think it was almost 400 yards passing.
Yeah,
28 for 43, I believe. Like he threw the ball. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. When you probably would have thought going into this game, if Foles' stat line says he threw 43 times, the Eagles lost.
If I see that, Foles threw 43 times. I'm like, one, they were down most of the game, or they were just in mop up.
That's what you'd
time.
Assume. Yeah,
you know, like it would have looked like a fantasy stat sheet instead of like, you know, like an actual like competitive game, but. Yep. I mean, Tom Brady wasn't really any better. Tom Brady had to throw the ball a heck of a lot too.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was just that game. It was almost like watching like a Big 12 game.
Oh yeah.
I mean, just throwing the ball over the field.
It was definitely more like a college type game with it. I mean, there really wasn't much defense. I mean,
there really
wasn't. Crunch time,
there's
the
11 guys out there.
There was 11 guys out there.
I don't know what they were doing for most of the game, but
I have
to say the Eagles were better against the run. The Patriots had a little bit of success. The Patriots were able to get some things going. We're able to sustain some drives at the run, so I don't want to take anything away from Deion Lewis or James White. But at the end of the day, the Eagles did have a better front seven, which we talked about.
They did enough, but doesn't it frustrate the hell out of you to see Patriots receivers running wide open every play?
Amendola was doing it. Chris Hogan was doing it. Which I still can't for the life of me figure out how Chris Hogan got passed up by that many teams and was on a practice squad before he signed with the Patriots.
You should not be getting that wide open in the NFL.
I don't know. I don't know what kind of defense was called, especially because, like we talked about, the Eagles' defense was good for most of the year.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was like something Brady was seeing on the field and telling those guys to run that, like we talked about in the preview, or if this was just something McDaniels had up his sleeve.
Yeah.
But they were making. I mean, at times they were making that Eagles secondary look silly. I mean, and I had to get, like, because I think it was Darby who was covering
Gronk on that second
touchdown.
Well,
he was covering, but I think he was covering Gronk for most of the evening.
Yeah.
I think he was doing that. And, I mean, I had to, Darby was actually
doing. The first half, they really had Gronk on lock.
Darby was doing a pretty good job through the most of the night, or, on Gronk. But again, like we talked about, he's almost uncoverable. Gronk, when they started going to Gronk out the gate in the second half.
Yep.
You know, there wasn't a lot that could stop him. I mean, he was making catches that you just were like, there's nothing that guy can do. On that second touchdown, there was literally nothing else Darby could have done outside of literally knocking his head off.
The craziest thing about how good Tom Brady is he doesn't even need Gronk.
No, I mean, he was doing it with Amendola. He's doing
with
Hogan.
You could put anybody out
Rex
there.
Burkhead.
They give Edelman that pretty big contract, and they didn't have him all year, and it didn't matter.
It's going to be dangerous when he comes back, but... I mean, I don't know, because, like, they had Amendola already, they have an Edelman, they have Brandon Cooks, but Brandon Cooks was really kind of irrelevant for most of the game.
Yeah, and he was out. I mean, he went out pretty early in the game.
He took that shot. Got rocked.
And it's going to be interesting because I really would like to see if there is any, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, maybe there's some truth to these rumors about this is it for Brady and Belichick together. I don't think it will be, but it'd be interesting. I mean, I talked to you earlier about I didn't think there was anything that could make Patriots fans more arrogant, and coming back from 28-3 did. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see when there's no more Brady, there's no more Belichick, and they go back to reality and realize that the last 17 years or plus, if they continue to go on, how some of them may have taken it for granted.
Well, I mean, can you imagine, though, like, if you're, say you are Robert Kraft, right? And I didn't want to go into, like, the aftermath yet, but we'll go there. We're going to go there. We're just going to do this. We're gonna fire this away here. But can you imagine if you're Robert Kraft, though, you deal Garoppolo this year, and then they both walk. And then you're like, well, now we're back to square one, because you don't even have Jacoby Brissett anymore.
No.
You're stuck with Brian Hoyer at the helm. Yeah. And with a lot of guys, like, I'm sorry.
No.
Tom Brady could make Edelman, Amendola, and Hogan look great. Brian Hoyer can't do that.
Imagine this. And me as a Broncos fan would probably cry, because you know how much I love Kirk Cousins. Imagine Brady and Belichick are gone. Or even just Brady, and Kirk Cousins is the next quarterback of the New England Patriots.
Yeah, but then
That's another 8 to 10 years of solid quarterback play.
Yeah, but that's depending on who they get as a coach. I mean, Belichick's gone, McDaniels is gone.
See, I get what you're saying, but I also think if for as great as a coach Belichick is, it's more Brady than it is Belichick.
I don't know, man. I
there's some good, there's some great coaches in this league that don't have the success they'd have if they had a Brady.
Yeah, but I don't think Brady would have had as much success without Belichick. I really
think we'll never truly know.
We can get into that argument for us, but it's such a symbiotic relationship between the two, so we can leave it there.
Which is what I think is part of what Patriots fans could potentially take for granted, is that for the last 17 years they'd have one head coach and one quarterback, both Hall of Fame caliber, for the last 17 years straight, which. I hate the Patriots as a Broncos fan, so obviously I want to see Brady and Belichick gone, so it opens more of a window for Denver to get back to, you know, winning, getting the playoffs, getting more Super Bowls. But at the same time, it's like I can appreciate their greatness. I can respect their greatness as much as I hate the team as a whole. So for me, being as I don't like them at all and especially don't like their fans, to see what happens after those two are gone, I'm rubbing my hands together like that little mischievous smile I can't wait.
But I have a respect for the Patriots, what they've done, because I love the game of football. A lot of people do. So, I mean, even then, like, you could sit there and say, you hate Brady, you hate Belichick. Yeah, I hate playing against these guys all the time, because they end up embarrassing the Steelers in most cases. Not this year, but either way. But my point is I want to look at it more from a level of, you know, how does this change? How does this change the game? You know, I honestly don't think it's going to happen, though, because Tom Brady putting out this ridiculous documentary where he's making out with his kid and he's, you know, and he's out there throwing footballs to invisible guys and has coaches in his ear saying you need to get rid of the ball a quarter of a second earlier, whatever, going all this stuff off the hodgepodge. But then, really, you know, I'm really curious to see how that would really happen. I just don't think it's going to happen, though, because of, again, all this stuff's falling in place. There's been the stories of it coming out. But then, like, when you lose, like, a game like this, guys like Brady, if he's the competitor people say he is, Belichick hates losing. Kraft hates losing. Yep. They're going to figure out. And they got to get it back together. And one more run.
Totally hear that. But then the other side is part of that. The reason why this documentary is coming out is maybe me thinking, like, this is it.
Yeah, but he's talking about he can play for another 5 years.
And I'm sure he could.
And he can. Like, he got hit a lot tonight. And he popped right back up. Looked healthy.
Wasn't like lagging. You hear about his eating habits and his the way he keeps himself in shape, and he doesn't put any, like, doesn't drink alcohol, doesn't eat bad food whatsoever, never doesn't have a cheat day. Mm-hmm. Like, it's ridiculous, and you could see it with on the field, because at 40 years old, he hasn't lost anything, but it can happen young. Like that.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Listen,
I mean, look at Peyton.
There's another thing.
Peyton went from leading the best offensive in NFL history to just another guy when it came to physical.
He had neck problems. I mean, there was a lot of
But when he came back, when he came to Denver, he had three great years. Mm-hmm. And then that final year, they go on to win the Super Bowl because, you know, with his brain, he's cerebral. He's the most cerebral player to ever play the game, and he got it done with that. But physically, he was just done.
Yeah, but that was more cerebral. Like, you didn't see Peyton Manning pushing the ball down the field. I mean, he was just picking defenses apart, which he was successful at doing. But, I mean, he was not going out there and slinging the ball over the field. Like, it was a lot of calculation.
And physically, Brady can still do that.
And Brady can't. I mean, I saw a few ducks tonight. honestly, I think there's another thing motivating Brady here. Okay? And that is Giselle only marries winners. Okay? And if he's not going to win...
Giselle Foles?
It just went there, man. They don't call Mr. Foles what they call Mr. Foles in Philadelphia for nothing. But we won't go there. This is a family show.
Well, they also call him Saint Nick. So
there we go. We'll call him Saint Nick. All right. That's better. That's much better for this.
It's a rhyme, in case you're wondering.
Well, listen, as long as they don't bring the Philadelphia Nutchuck or whatever the heck that was.
Oh, yeah.
The guy that
what
we
was
saw.
What was that guy's name?
Honky.
He's from North Philly, human Nunchuck.
Oh, gosh. Anybody who could watch that.
Google that video. Human Nunchuck. His name's Honky.
I didn't know somebody's arm could do that and the guy be conscious. Like, I mean, that would make me pass out. But either way, getting back to the game at hand, getting back to the aftermath. You know, the Patriots played a heck of a game. They did lose tonight. I want to focus more a little bit on the Eagles, though, right now. They did win it. They deserve this moment. This city deserves that, even though it's a little bit after an hour and a half after this has happened. And the city's probably on fire right now. But, you know, let's talk about Philadelphia while it's still around, while it still has a zip code. Well, that's fitting, right? You work for them. But either way, I don't want to go there. But my point is, you know, I think there's a lot of speculation of this Foles thing. Like, I really think that Foles not only deserves it, but I know he's under contract, but I think a team like Arizona or a team that really isn't in the race for Cousins can go out and make a bargain.
Well, I think Arizona is in the race. But it's whoever doesn't get Cousins will be in the running. But the thing is, he's still
under contract. And I think they're willing to trade a couple of draft picks for him, though.
Still under contract in Philly. Philly clearly knows the importance of having a legitimate backup quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw that in the past, you know, couple months. And it's going to take a lot. I mean, it's going to take more than what Washington gave Kansas City for Alex Smith.
Well, what did they give? I don't remember.
Third-round pick and...
Yeah, but I think let's put it there. I think he is worth an offensive or defensive player. He's definitely worth a first round pick at this point because he won a Super Bowl.
I agree with you, but there's teams they don't like to give up draft picks. They value these draft picks more than I think they should because you're drafting an unknown commodity.
But there's a lot of stupid GMs.
I know.
There's a lot
Well, I'm not saying it's stupid to trade for that first round.
Oh, no, but I'm just saying.
But a lot of them won't.
It is and it is. I mean, if you're a team that's in, like, you know, rebuild mode and you need draft picks, you don't want to lose them. But a team like Arizona, I don't know. Because their receiving core, especially with Fitzgerald getting older, coming off a career year, all the credit in the world to the guy. But he's getting older. They have a great running back who's coming off an injury. The defense, I think, is still pretty decent. I just don't know how far they are away from a piece like that. I just think Arizona is the front runner right off that, man, because I don't hear a lot about them in the Kirk Cousins talks. And if they were going to give up a first-round pick, I think that might be a team that could give up a first or a second-round pick to get a guy like Foles. And then they would, because this is the team that literally has had to have Carson Palmer play carrying his own leg around, or Drew Stanton, who has to come in. And Drew Stanton, for all due respect, he's not a starter.
They'll have a healthy David Johnson back. So
I mean, if they could have a Foles to complement that, I mean, and Foles has proven he can do it.
Well, here's the thing. We talked about how – I talked about, and you agree, the first and second you're talking about. You're going to have to give up a lot. Do you feel like if the Buffalo Bills have Nick Foles, they beat the Jaguars in that divisional round or wild-card round?
No, I don't.
You don't think Nick Foles is superior to Tyrod Taylor?
I
don't even think it's close.
But let's put it this way. Do I think Foles is a better throwing talent than Tyrod Taylor?
Yes.
Hands down, yeah, okay. No doubt. I'm not arguing that. But I don't think Tyrod Taylor's the reason they lost that game. The reason
they
the Bills lost
3 points.
Yeah, but the reason the Bills lost that game is first and foremost, they don't have anybody to throw the ball to. And they dropped a lot of balls in that game. Yeah. Tyrod Taylor was running for his life in that game.
But
and
I think
would
you
find
can,
open guys
you
and
can
they would drop
do
the ball.
More. Your offense is more dynamic with a better thrower of the football like a Nick Foles than a Tyrod Taylor.
But there's plenty of guys out there who can make the argument. If you have a mobile quarterback like that, you can do a lot more.
Well, the point I was trying to get to is talking about giving up a lot. The Bills own the 21st and 22nd pick. That's two first-round picks back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
You typically only have one first-round pick anyway. Maybe they only give up one. But even if you give up two, a first-round pick for a Nick
Foles.
I think
a lot of people... I mean,
getting out of the first
for
Nick
Foles. A lot of people are on Tyrod Taylor's side to get out anyway. He wants to get out of town because it doesn't matter. So
who's going
to
take Tyrod Taylor?
Oh, there's a team that would take Tyrod Taylor. Even if not as a startup, bring him in as a backup. Yeah. I mean, there's guys out there. He's still young.
Well, he's going to want to start, so obviously any team that's going to give him a chance to start is who he's going to go to. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Jets make a run at Tyrod Taylor.
I wouldn't even be surprised if the Steelers made a run at Tyrod Taylor, because Ben, whether they want to believe it or not, is within that 3-year mark, and this would be the perfect time to really hone your skills, Tyrod Taylor, and become a bona fide starter quarterback.
I'm not sure he's at that. He's young enough to be like, let's bring him to backup Ben for 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a stretch. I'm saying that as a stretch.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying that as a stretch, and that makes total sense too. But, I mean, there's still plenty of teams out there that really, I think, who could benefit from a guy like Tyrod Taylor. Yeah. But I don't want to get too far from him. I think Buffalo makes sense. For what you're saying, for the points you're bringing up, I think Arizona makes sense.
Minnesota?
I've been on the Case Keenum train all year.
Well, the reports from guys like Adam Schefter say that the Vikings are sticking with Keenum.
I don't think that's a bad option. Keenum earned it this year. Yeah. Keenum went out and played.
Well, especially they got that kind of defense. Yeah. I mean, they didn't show up in the NFC Championship game, but you got that kind of defense and those kind of weapons they have on offense.
I mean, you can win with Keenum. I don't want to put it on Case Keenum why they didn't win that NFC title game. Their defense didn't show up. I don't think anybody on the Vikings got off the bus in that game.
I think they kind of had a hangover from the way they won the Saints game.
I mean, that team might have just... I mean, that team played a lot of football. That team, I think, was just kind of spent.
Yes,
and they got bit by the injury bug all year. So, I mean, that team will be back, though. I think Case Keenum has earned a shot at least one season to, this is my team for one season. If he tanks next year,
they'll probably just tag him.
Yeah.
You know, see if he can prove himself worthy of a long-term contract this year. Like, the Redskins decided to do multiple times with Cousins, and now they've ruined it because he don't want to be there anymore.
Yeah.
And they go out and get a quarterback that's 4 years older and not as good.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Redskins.
Well, that's the Redskins.
I mean, dysfunctional organization.
That is Dan
They're
Snyder
almost
and
as
his
dysfunctional
cronies.
As the Browns.
That is Dan Snyder and his cronies doing what they do best. But I just think that was. I think that's definitely a conversation that needs to be had. Is because everybody's talking about Kirk Cousins, but really Nick Foles might be a good commodity to go after
if he becomes available for. I don't. Obviously, they're not going to let him go. If he becomes available and they say they're willing to listen to trades, that after Kirk Cousins, Nick Foles immediately becomes the second best option of quarterbacks that could be available.
But I mean, there's also a scenario in this where the Eagles understand what they got and they don't let
which is what I would do. You just won a Super Bowl, so it's not like you. Well, then again, I guess it kind of goes both ways, because when you win a Super Bowl, you buy yourself some time. Mm-hmm. To pull what you're going to do for the next few years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the thing, too. I mean, like, look at it from this sense that, say you are Nick Foles, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe I don't push for this. Like, I won my Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I'll go take the clipboard, get back on the bench. No
you can
pressure.
Never, you can
and
never
be done.
Take away. You can never take it away.
And you can't take it away from me. So if we tank next year and Carson Wentz is in there,
yeah.
Not my you're fault, still, guys. I won the Super Bowl for you last year.
You were the starting quarterback for the first Super Bowl the Eagles ever won in a city like Philly loyal fans, devoted fans. You are a hero. You are a god now in the city of Philadelphia.
He will get free cheesesteaks for life. But no, but really, but really, my point here is Nick Foles not only just won them, that's like helped win that Super Bowl. He carried that offense. He Absolutely. Picked up the offense and took it with
Absolutely.
Him. You know, you can put it on Peterson. I mean, but Foles went out there, executed, did what he had to do. You know, this wasn't like a backup, hey, don't lose us the game kind of scenario. This was a take the game, we need you to win.
You mean like the Jags coached when Bortles was playing quarterback? Exactly. When he was playing well enough to trust him, and they didn't do it. But Peterson put all his faith in Nick Foles. And it's funny because I remember during the game, you know, I was on Twitter looking at certain stuff, and someone was tweeting about, you know, Josh McDaniels is going to go down as one of the best offensive coordinators ever. You know, he needs some work on being a head coach, but he's one of the greatest play callers of all time. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, he has Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You and I could call that offense. And that's what he's saying. You know, maybe you put it on Peterson, but Foles still has to go out there and make a play. So. God. Let's not even.
I mean, it happened. You can't erase that.
He was gone before Tebow was playing.
No, come on. That's just not fair.
Well, it was Mike McCoy that did it with Tebow, which was very impressive, by the way.
That was very impressive. God bless everybody. God bless. God bless. But honestly, you know, it's going to be an interesting offseason going in. And it's an offseason I'm kind of excited about, really, you know, to see really what moves or what takes place or what shakes things up in the NFL. I honestly, those are some good headlines we're talking about. What, you know, getting back into the Patriots a little bit, you know, I think this kind of softens the market on a guy like Patricia a little bit. You know, because I don't know.
Well, he's going to be the head coach of the Lions.
Yeah, but like if you're the Lions, you're not like, oh, crap.
Yeah, they gave about 41 points in the Super Bowl. Yeah. And but that's going to be interesting how he does as a head coach anyway, because Belichick disciples really have success.
Not just that, though. It's not just 41 points in the Super Bowl. Any of the good teams they've played this year, like superior talent-wise teams, they've struggled against. Yeah. And the Lions are going to face a lot of that. So on a defensive side of the ball, at least, not offensively. Yeah. They got some talent on offense, but...
And the thing is, it's like I saw a stat the other day that Stafford's record versus above 500 teams is like 4-50 something, which sucks that it goes on him, because you put Stafford on a successful franchise that knows what the hell they're doing, and he's already one of the most talented quarterbacks.
The Lions have really
made up in there as an elite quarterback if he was surrounded by a better organization.
The Lions have made an honest attempt, I think, to try to right this ship. I just think that they're running into some issues.
Which is now why they're bringing in a Patriot coach, hoping that he brings that kind of attitude.
Well, I honestly didn't think that Jim Caldwell was the problem with that team.
Of course not.
I think the coach was actually in place to actually help this team develop.
That's what dysfunctional organizations do. They just hire, fire, hire, fire, mm-hmm. which is what scares me about what Denver's getting into. But, I mean, a little bit of a different situation. Kubiak, you know, with his health.
Listen, you say that for Let's Talk Broncos, okay? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But no, Josh, I'm just messing with you there. Honestly, but you're right, though, about dysfunctional organizations and doing that stuff. And that's why I say this leads me to an interesting scenario in this offseason for the NFL, because there's still a lot that could play out. And there's still a lot of guys that could be on the move. I mean, Le'Veon Bell, I mean, the clock's ticking.
And
on
we
the
are
here.
About, what's today, the 5th?
Mm-hmm.
We are a month. Let's say 4.5-5 weeks away from free agency starting. March 14th. And there could be a few days leading up to that. I mean, you got the possibility of there being a trade for Cousins, because then it takes you out of having to compete against other teams salary-wise to pay him the most. Then you can negotiate with him before any other team. So, I mean, it's a fascinating offseason throughout throughout the entire league. Mm-hmm. I think especially since the Patriots lost, because you kind of got, now we can see, like I said, where there's smoke, there's fire. Is there going to be something there with that? Like I said, I'm leaning towards I'd be shocked if that happened, but I'd probably celebrate it.
but to elaborate on the NFL free agency, I mean, you have players out there like Le'Veon Bell who might test the market. You have guys like Kirk Cousins who are probably going to be available if not done via trade. You have there's a lot of pieces out there. You know, outside of those two players, Josh, is there anybody else that you see in the free agent market that really could come in and help a team now? That right off the top of your head. Or is there something probably?
It's actually not that strong of a free agent class. It really isn't, especially if teams looking for one of the most important position groups on the field, offensive line. It's a very weak offensive line class.
Okay.
There's not a whole lot going on the defense, really, in the defensive side of the ball overall. I mean, it'd be nuts to see a guy like Le'Veon Bell get into free agency because he would have 20 plus teams ready to sign him for 20 plus teams,
but I don't know how much. I really don't know what the exact number is because, like, the Steelers tried to make him the highest paid running back in football.
Yeah.
He said no. So I don't know what he has. Like, you have to add the number of the highest paid running back plus the highest paid receiver, and then that's what you come to.
I mean, I understand guys want to get paid, and I'm all for guys getting paid. I get it. But to just come out and be so selfishly open about it, and especially, you know, leading up to the AFC Championship game, it seemed just like, you know, all week he was, or AFC Divisional game against the Jags. During the week, he was talking a lot about, like, you know, they were like, well, how about this offseason? He's saying, well, you know, I want to be paid what I'm worth. I'm like, dude, you got a playoff game coming up. He's tweeting, oh, we're going to have back-to-back, you know, second rounds. Yeah. And it just, I don't know. And for me, I love the talent, but I hate when guys talk like that. I hate it. Look what happened to Jalen Ramsey. We're going to the Super Bowl and we're going to win it, and they lose to the Patriots.
I love to see guys to be able to express themselves, but it does. Sometimes it gets them in trouble.
I get the confidence. I even get the cockiness and the borderline arrogance, but it's like at some point you got to tone it down because now you're making yourself look like an idiot.
Well, I would just say, I mean, like, I think, like, as Tony Dungy always puts it, just don't hit send. Just don't do it. Yeah. Like, just don't do it. Like, you may be thinking it.
Yeah.
Write it down. Put it on a piece of paper. Whatever.
Save it.
You know, write it to a pen pal in Mexico. I don't care, but maybe don't tweet it. You know, like, I don't know. Call your mom and say it, like, you know, she'd probably
keep it in the locker room.
She'd probably love to hear from you.
Yeah, keep it in the locker room because you want to build that confidence with the team. You don't want to overlook anybody, but you want to bring that confidence to the game.
You know, Josh, you also did bring up one other thing too, which was funny about the Super Bowl, getting back to the actual game at hand, and that was an interesting take on LeGarrette Blount and Chris Long.
Back-to-back Super Bowl champs for different teams.
Yeah, that's a crazy stat, actually. That's a crazy story just because...
And that's cool because that's a bond those two will share alone. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Like, they were both on that Patriot team from last season, but then they're on the Eagles this year. And, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I think that's just a phenomenal story, for one. But also, you know... I wonder how that feels being in a different locker room. Like, I'm doing this again with a different team.
Whoa. Who's going to win next year? Like, can I sign with them?
Do we do this again? Like, do they get together? Do they rock paper scissors?
Now you'd really start worrying about them. You know, if they go to a different team next year and that team wins the Super Bowl, you kind of be like, what's going on there? That'd be super weird.
NFL conspiracy.
But it's cool. Yeah, it's a cool story.
Well, and then also continuing on with the game. I mean, that is a cool story, I think. But also, you know, Josh, there was a couple of moments in this game tonight, too. I hate to bring it up because I don't like talking about it. The NFL doesn't like talking about it. But the catch thing.
Yeah.
I mean, but we won't spend a lot of time on it. But honestly, it's a little bit...
I think,
let me just come out and say, and I say this full-heartedly, not because of what happened with the Steelers this season, but I am telling everyone right now, don't ask me. I don't know what a catch is. Unless you eat the football, like, knife and fork it, I don't know what else you have to do.
I think... By calling both of the... Well, first of all, according to the rule, the first one wasn't a touchdown. I love that they called it a touchdown, though, because in common sense, that's a touchdown.
Yeah.
The second one, the same thing, not as close as the first one. But I love the fact that they kept them both as touchdowns because I think they killed two birds with one stone. They killed the Patriots get all the calls, and they killed the not calling a catch but using common sense. And they did it both in the biggest game of the year, and now they're going to fix the catch rule in the offseason. I think the NFL did themselves a huge favor by all of this happening in one night.
But do you think they had to do that? Like, do you think there was pressure from New York when they were reviewing those calls to be like, we can't overturn these touchdowns, we can't overturn these
things? I can't answer
if because if it happens again, and the Patriots luck out again.
For the Patriots, And I think it was a big deal that it happened against the Patriots. I can't say for certain that that's what they were told to do, but it wouldn't surprise
me. I'm not one to, like, believe the conspiracies, but like I told you, it happened to
this
my team.
This would be a good conspiracy because it was the right way.
Well, no, but I'm saying, but like, it actually, like, No, but I'm saying, like, the NFL knew, like, if they did this and they overturned those calls, the backlash. Like, literally, if it did happen,
oh,
and they over
full 180,
and they
I think,
over, yeah, yeah, and they overturned those calls, oh, like, yeah, literally, Philadelphia is not burning right now. Philadelphia is a crater.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been off the map.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't...
There would have been probably death threats to Roger Goodell. Like,
yeah. I mean, like, I think literally a mob from Philadelphia would have marched to New York and burned down the NFL offices.
Like, it would have just... Yeah, it could have been that bad. Like, but, literally.
But, like, think about the firestorm it would have created, like, if they did do that. Like, because then not only is it the Patriots, like, refs thing getting together and, like, Roger Goodell and Robert Kraft thing getting on, but then it literally is, like, how many of these plays got to happen before, like... And they're all happening against the Patriots.
And
like,
all just, like I said, how they're working on fixing the catch rule in the offseason. In the biggest game of the year, you have a couple of these instances where it goes the way that all fans think it should, except for Patriots fans, obviously.
Yeah.
But it goes in the direction of common sense.
Mm-hmm.
If you use your brain, those are both catches, both touchdowns. There shouldn't even have been an argument.
Well, this, and that's the thing. But and the second catch by Ertz, you know, for the touchdown... The first thing, we looked at each other, and I said, Jesse James.
Yeah.
I was like, this is Jesse James 2.0.
It was very similar because they were both reaching for the goal line.
But
that was not in the process of catching the ball. They had already caught the ball. They were trying to score
the explanation was, what was the explanation?
Didn't survive the ground.
No, but what was the explanation for the Zach Ertz catch? It was, when he caught the ball, he became a runner.
Yeah.
You know what? That needs to be, they should put that next to what Riveron or whatever heck that Jack Wagon's name is and be like, what do you say to that, Chief?
Yeah.
Like, because they don't know. And like, just stop acting like you know.
Absolutely.
I don't want to hear Chris Carter come out again and say anything. I don't want to hear these Jack Wagons say anything. Like you said, get in the room, use common sense, fix the rule,
and that's the thing.
Up.
And once you cross the goal line, it should be dead ball touchdown. Doesn't matter if the ball hits the ground, it comes out.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that full-heartedly. But we'll see what happens when it comes to the actual, you know, what they determined in the offseason. But I thought we at least had to mention it because there was not one, but there were two instances tonight where I was like, wow, this
Patriots
might
fans aren't happy about it. But, I mean, they now they know how we feel when we're watching them.
Yeah.
And
now you know. I mean, it's how's it taste? Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No, but honestly, you know, I have to tip my cap to both these teams, both these organizations this year.
It was a great game.
Since we started this podcast, you know, it's been an exciting NFL season. It's been a lot of great talking points this year. It's been a lot to go forward with. You know, I can't wait to keep doing this, if anything.
Yeah, and there's going to be plenty to talk about in the offseason.
Yeah, there's going to be plenty to talk about here in the offseason. I'm actually going to kind of miss the NFL
owns
segments, though.
24/7, 365, the NFL owns.
I'm actually going to miss the game previews and stuff like that. I mean, well, obviously until next season. But, you know, but like you said, it should be an exciting offseason. You know, anything else from the game, Josh, that you really want to pull from? Or anything you think worth mentioning tonight?
I think we've pretty much covered it all. I mean, like I said, like Foles, I mean, plays out of his mind. Totally didn't expect that. So I think that's going to be the biggest story. And then a big part of that story we talked about is he's going to get, unless a team offers up, you know, that King's Ransom type thing, and they want Foles that bad, maybe a Cleveland. Wouldn't be surprised. Would not be surprised if a Cleveland does that. And maybe it would be worth it for a Cleveland-type team to just, for once, try to go and get a guy that actually has proven he can play, especially in the biggest moments.
Well, I mean, if you compliment that next to Josh Gordon, it actually wouldn't be too bad.
Nah, that's might if be they something keep Josh Gordon, which
there.
They should.
Yeah.
As long as he's got his stuff together, his life together, and everything like that. And it's like, but if a team doesn't offer them enough for the Eagles to give him up, he's going to go right back to backing up Wentz next year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to bench Wentz for Foles just because he had this run.
Not at all. And like,
I mean, that's like saying Flacco is a Hall of Fame quarterback because he had one great playoff run.
Like, and they're not going to go into this like with a quarterback controversy next season.
No,
there's not going to be that going on. Like, it should be cut and dry no matter what.
They'll still
what.
Love the city of Philadelphia, the team, everybody. They'll still love Foles
real.
For
he's
what he did.
He's getting a statue outside Wentz. The link. I mean, like, it's happening. Like, I mean, with a cheesesteak in hand and a football. Like, yeah. But honestly, guys, it's been a great season. Josh, I mean, I love talking football with you guys, so
we can
continue this on. Guys, this is going to wrap up our Super Bowl postgame. Josh, I have one more question for you. Just one before I let you off the hook. Favorite Super Bowl commercial of the evening?
Favorite Super Bowl commercial of the evening? was Eli and OBJ dancing.
Yeah.
That was great.
That was
I loved it.
That was pure gold that right might, there.
That's right up there with one of the best Super Bowl commercials ever. It may be the best ever.
That was a pretty good one.
It was great.
There was a couple of notable mentions. I mean, I enjoyed the Puppy Bowl leading up to it. I'm not going to lie to you.
Puppy Bowl was great.
Team Ruff all day. Let's go. The Beagles versus the... What is it? Well, I forget what the accent is. The New England Beagles pitchers or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
And the Beagles. But either way, it was a fun day all the way around. We had a lot of family, a lot of food, a lot of good times. You know, I hope you guys were able to share the moments just as well. But we're going to sign off, and that's going to wrap up the 2017 season here for the NFL football. I guess it wraps it up. But either way, one season down in the books.
It'll kind of be slow until we get a lot closer to, you know, that March 14th date where it's the new league year, free agency starts. There'll be a little bit of a lull. The draft should be exciting. Mm-hmm.
But honestly, in wrapping up this show, though, it's been an exciting season here on the Southwest Florida Sports Report covering this stuff. We only hope to get more in-depth, more detailed analysis for you next season. And everything going forward. So with that being said...
Pitchers and catchers soon.
Yeah, pitchers and catchers. Baseball's getting ready to heat up. We have March Madness coming around the corner. It should be an interesting spring session of sports here. We got the NHL playoffs coming up here within the next couple of months. You know, it's going to be... Believe me, we're not going to have any shortage of things to talk about.
No, not at all.
We'll catch you guys back here next week here with the Southwest Florida Sports Report. This is going to end the Super Bowl post-game show as well as our NFL season here. So with that being said, guys, take care, have fun, and until next time, see you later.
We'll talk to you next week.
Whoop, whoop.